Often vulgar, always explicit, and sometimes funny.
Slap box. Slap box.
Welcome to the Slapbox Podcast. This is episode 718. I'm your host, Josh Albrecht, recording once again inside the Slapbox penthouse. My trusty sidekick, Agent Fox Mulder, is... I think he left the room. I'm not sure where he went. He's already eaten. Like, I have an hour ago, so he's not running downstairs. He's not running downstairs. He's got a couple hours now before he gets fed again. Yes. It is Memorial Day weekend. I'm recording this on Saturday, of course, like I normally do. I've dedicated, you know, most of this weekend to painting, like I have been since February 11th. Son of a bitch. When I started painting, of course, the hexagon pattern from The Shining, the Overlook Hotel from The Shining, in there, above my cabinets in the kitchen. And, I'm slowly getting there, yesterday I had the most efficient day, I think, of painting, at least of the orange. I was able to do almost four times what I do on a normal day of painting the orange, so I was pretty happy with that, although by the end of the night, I didn't get quite as far as I was hoping. I was hoping to get, like, one more coat, the last segment of orange. I did, like, two segments, whereas normally I do just the primer on one segment, and then the next day I'll do the orange on that segment, whereas I did the primer on two segments and did the orange on two of them. I just didn't finish the last coat of orange on the last segment. I was one short. I'm putting like three coats of orange each time I do it, and about three coats of primer. So, I mean, it's a bit of a thing. It's with a small paintbrush. Though yesterday I was using a larger paintbrush. I didn't want to spend a lot on paintbrushes. I just bought packs of paintbrushes for like $6. And also I was trying to find which paintbrushes worked the best for it. Yesterday I felt like I found a brush that worked pretty well, but I only have one of that size. And just been trying to keep it clean. I find it's hard to, like, keep a brush for very long using it with that wall paint there. I probably would work better if I had better cleaner instead of just using water to clean it off. As Agent Mulder is now at my feet. He's at my feet. He's saying hi. He's saying what's up. He's probably going to start biting me here shortly. Me painting just stresses him out. He's like, God damn it. Just give me some attention, man. Give me some attention. You'd think he was a dog. You'd think he was a little puppy or something. I was hoping that this weekend, since I'm off until Wednesday, not going back to work until Wednesday, that hopefully I can really make some progress. Have just maybe get it down to like 2 weeks to go after I finish this weekend. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yesterday that was big, getting pretty much four times what I would normally do on a normal day done. That, you know, that cuts it down, because I was looking at like mid-June-ish to be done. But now, I mean, if I can continue, I don't think I'm going to be continuously doing like four times what I would normally do in a day. Because it does take a lot of time to do that. I spent pretty much all day yesterday painting. So I won't be doing that every day. But it is tempting to just keep going and just like disregard anything else this weekend. But I know I'm going to see The Mandalorian and Grogu tomorrow. It appears, I guess. We still don't have tickets, so I'm not even concrete that, or, you know, certain we're going to go see it tomorrow, so I don't know. I'll see it at some point in time this weekend. I don't know, maybe Monday or something. I have no idea. Yeah. I still need to change my oil in my car, too. That's going to be... I'll probably try to push that off till Tuesday. And, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But man, it is going to be exciting to finally finish that painting. And I did find out via Etsy that I did, of course, order the Bruce Campbell Ash Williams bust from Evil Dead 2 off Etsy from Evan Para on Etsy, the seller. Evan Para FX. And let's see here. Oh man, that's gonna be so great to have that. Let's see, I read the message. I asked him if there was any updates on it. He replied, "Hey buddy, sorry for the delay, but yes, it should probably be all finished over this weekend. So almost there. I should be able to get it shipped out on Monday. It's a holiday. I don't think he's gonna be able to ship it out." Monday, it says he'll shoot over some pics once it's all finished so I can see it before it goes out. So I'm thinking probably Tuesday is probably when I'll get it mailed. If that, we'll see. We'll see. But it sounds like he's close to getting it done. So I'm thinking another week I could have this bust. So I'm feeling like I need to just like hammer out that painting and get it done so I can have it ready for Ash to be in my... to be in my dining room / kitchen area, because I'm going to have it in like a little island thing there. I guess for right now, though, he's probably going to end up on the lava table. It's where his first home. Yeah, I was hoping I would be able to knock out the painting by then, but yeah, it's not going to happen. I know that I won't be done by the time that shows up, unless he's takes him longer than he seems to think it's going to. So we shall see, but I'm gonna guess that I won't be done painting by then. Speaking of Bruce Campbell, though, I was pretty excited to find out this week. Follow Bruce Campbell on Instagram and Facebook, you know, that fucking Mark Zuckerberg shit. Anyway, I think I saw it off a Facebook post, but he's Shemp Malone, if you're curious, on Instagram. Because Shemp was his favorite stooge. I got to say, I loved the Three Stooges growing up. Shemp was not my guy, but, you know, I do love the fact that he's a Stooges fan. And, of course, they integrate it in the Evil Dead and the Evil Dead video game. They got the Shemp Cola going on, which I think is actually in, like, maybe at least Army of Darkness. Or not Army of Darkness, but, yeah, the one in the medieval times. Ash versus the Evil Dead. That's what I meant to say, the show. Mr. Bruce Campbell posted, I imagine he posted on all of his socials, that he, which he is being treated for cancer right now. I do not recall what type of cancer, but I'm guessing it's going well because he had canceled all of his public appearances. He did announce he will be traveling for back to traveling for his film. Oh man, and I'm gonna have to look it up. I believe the oh shit, hold on. Yeah, Ernie and Emma is the name of his new movie that I believe he wrote and directed. That he is going on a tour via the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, which he will be in the St. Louis Alamo Drafthouse Cinema on Halloween of this year, 10/31, which I'm going to have to try and be there for that. I am definitely excited, which apparently he's got a couple other theaters, the Redford Theaters in just Detroit, Michigan. I was gonna say I thought maybe that was another chain, but no, I guess there's just one. Anyway, yeah, I hope to go to that. As of right now, there are no, you can't buy tickets, it would appear, yet, at the Alamo Draft House. But I am definitely, I definitely have to try to go to that, because I love me some Bruce Campbell, and knowing that he's sick, you know, it makes me concerned. You know, I don't know how much longer Bruce Campbell's going to be around, you know. And, well, I mean, don't know how much longer any of us will be around. That's just kind of, you know, the one definite in life is that it all ends. It ends. It's the one thing that's for certain in life is that it will end one day. And so, yeah, I'm hoping that I will get a chance to go to that on Halloween. It's like, and the question becomes, do I dress up? It's Halloween. I haven't dressed up for Halloween in a minute. But do I need to dress up as Ash? You know? I'm going to venture to guess. A lot of people are going to dress up for that one. It is Halloween. And I got to honor the man himself. And do I dress as Mr. Bruce Campbell? I've always wanted to dress up as Ash Williams. Now might be the time. Although maybe I was thinking, you know, since I've done the Shining stuff, this isn't related to Bruce Campbell, but, you know, I could do the Jack Torrance from the Shining. Mr. Jack Nicholson, yeah. I don't know if he'd appreciate that. I feel like Bruce Campbell's a horror fan in general. You know, he's probably a fan of the Shining. I imagine there's going to be a bunch of people dressed up as Ash for this viewing. I would assume that you get to meet Bruce Campbell at the end. I don't know how that works. I've never gone to a showing like that where I'm assuming that, you know, he introduces it. The Alamo Draft House, I mean, those are smaller theaters. I would assume you get a chance to talk to him, at least meet him and stuff. I imagine it's not much, but he's probably just, you know, talking about the film before and or after. And I'm going to venture to guess. He does, you know, a lot of meet and greets, from what I understand. A lot of stuff like that. But, oh, man. I wish I could get tickets already so I can, you know, get more details. But, man, yeah, it'd be great to meet the Chin. Hail the King, baby. It would be cool, too, I thought. I don't know. I would take it in with me to the Alamo Draft House just right away. It might be kind of awkward. I think he might appreciate the bust of him. And it would probably be, you know, it would be cool to get a picture of him with it. It would be really cool. I would wonder, though, I'm assuming there's a chance to meet him at that event. But I would at least show him a picture of the bust. I would imagine. I don't know. but I know he does a lot of Comic-Con and that sort of thing, and a lot of stuff where you can meet him. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I do love me some Bruce Campbell. I need to get one of his books. I believe he's got several books. There's one called the Bruce Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. I wrote a whole book about it. Hold on a minute. I love me some Bruce Campbell. This is there's an audiobook too. Oh man. Let's read this. Let's synopsis here. What you're reading right now is known as the flap copy. This is where the 72,444 words of my latest book, Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, I don't have a Bruce Campbell impression, sorry, are cooked down to fit in a 3.5 by 9.5 inch column. But how does one do that with a fictional story about a B-movie actor's disastrous attempt to finally star in a big-budget Hollywood movie? Do you tantalize readers with snappy zingers like the one in Chapter 6 where Biff the Wonder Boy says, "You may be bred in old Kentucky, but you're only a crumb up here." You may be bred in old Kentucky, but you're only a crumb up here. That's pretty great. Anyway, or do you reveal, and he spelled bred as B-R-E-D, as in you were bred. Anyway, oh god damn it. I'm not, apparently not signed in on this browser. On Amazon. Anyway, or do you reveal pivotal plot points like the one at the end of the book where the little girl on crutches points an accusing finger and shouts, "The killer is Mr. Potter"? I have too much respect for you as an attention deficit consumer to attempt such an obvious ruse. But let's not play games here. You've already picked up the book, so you either A, know who I am, B, like the cool smoking jacket I'm wearing on the cover, C, have just discovered that the bookstore restroom is out of toilet paper. Is this a relationship book? Well, if by relationship book you mean that the characters in it have relationships or are related to someone, then yes, absolutely. Will you learn how to pick up chicks? Good heavens, I only hope so. Though for the best to... For the best results in that department, you should both read this book and be Brad Pitt. Fuck. I can do part of that. I don't know if I can read, though. Anyway. Is it a sequel to my autobiography? I mean, after all, Brad Pitt is from Missouri. I'm from Missouri. It's close enough, right? Is it a sequel to my autobiography? If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor... If there's not a better fucking title for an autobiography, I mean, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. God damn, I love Bruce Campbell. Sadly, no, which made it much harder to write. According to my publisher, I haven't done enough since 2001 to warrant another memoir. Well, that's some bullshit, because he did Ash vs. the Evil Dead since then, and I feel like you need a whole book for that. Is it an autobiographical novel? Yes, I'm the lead character in the story and I'm a real person and everything in the book actually happened except for all the stuff that didn't. Mostly the action revolves around my preparations for a pivotal role in director Mike Nichols' A-list relationship film, Let's Make Love, starring Richard Gere, Renee Zellweger, and Christopher Plummer. This is the kind of break most actors can only dream of. But my... Homeric attempt to break through the glass ceiling of B-grade genre fare is hampered by a vengeful studio executive and a production that becomes infected by something called the B-movie virus, symptoms of which include excessive use of cheesy special effects, slapstick, and projectile vomiting. When someone fingers me, as the guy responsible for the virus, thus ruining my good standing in the entertainment industry. Hey, I said it was fiction, okay? I became a fugitive racing against the clock, an innocent patsy battling the shadowy forces of the studio system to clear my name, save my career, and destroy the Death Star. In a jaw-dropping twist worthy of Hitchcock, see page 274, you'll grasp as I turn the tables on Hollywood and attempt to salvage my reputation in a town where you're only as good as your last remake. From a violent fistfight with a Buddhist to a life-altering stint in federal prison, this novel has it all. If you like John Grisham, Tom Clancy, or one too many run-on sentences, you'll probably love Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. I'd love me a run-on sentence. I mean, that's the only sentences I use, or run-ons. And if the 72,444 words are too time-consuming, there are lots and lots of cool graphics. Regards, Bruce, don't call me Ash Campbell. Bruce Campbell's first book, If Chins Could Kill, was a major sleeper hit and became a New York Times and national bestseller. His immense energy and sharp wit are in evidence again in Make Love, the Bruce Campbell Way, a novel that will have readers laughing out loud. When was this book out? I don't see a
date when it was
put. Oh, here we go. Oh, public. Okay, he hadn't done Ash vs. the Evil Dead yet. It was in 2005 when he put out this. Let's see what other books the man, the chin, has. He's got a few. If Chins Could Kill, of course, Confession of the B-Movie Actor. That is, he's involved in the EC Archives, Tales from the Crypt, Volume 5. Has he written comics? I guess so. I probably heard about him involved in some stuff before. Let's see here. He's got a few. I had heard about the If Chins Could Kill book, which I need to just fucking order this book. I think I might have to do it. let's see here. If Chins Could Kill. I don't think I need to go over the comics here. Sergeant Rock versus the Army of the Dead. That's seems to be one he's been involved with quite a bit. Of course, the Army of the Dead. But of course, If Chins Could Kill. Then there's Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. So he did have some more stories. When was this one published? 2017. So this is after Ash versus the Evil Dead. I'd like to hear about that. Requiem for Ash edition. Then there's The Cool Side of My Pillow, a book of essays. So he's got some essays. And then there's Citizen Alex, Let Freedom Ring. This is in 2023. Let's see here. Do do do. And then there's, of course, there's House Divided, a political satire. He's done a few things here. And then the Make Love, the Bruce Campbell Way, which, of course, I just read the synopsis. I think I'm going to have to, I'm just going to have to order. If Chins Could Kill, I got to start from the beginning. You know, I'd love to hear the Evil Dead stories of the OGs. Damn it, notifications here. I don't need any of that. I gotta go. I gotta order this. If Chins Could Kill. If Chins Could Kill. Son of a bitch. Amazon. Damn you, Amazon. If Chins Could Kill by Bruce motherfucking Campbell. Fucking legend. Fucking legend. I'm doing it. Well, oh man, $22. I thought it would be maybe cheaper. So there's a used. I'll buy you. I don't mind buying used. I can buy a used for $634. I feel like I'm not really giving Bruce Campbell any money by doing that. But, you know, I plan to give him some money by, you know, hopefully going to the book site or the theater the not book signing but going to Alamo Drafthouse for his viewing of Ernie and Emma, this new movie that he wrote and directed. I believe he's going on a road trip to I believe I watched the trailers, but it's been a minute, to spread his wife's ashes. This is the plot of that one. I did it. I ordered the If Chins Could Kill. If I'm going to meet the man in person, I should at least read one of his books. If not multiple. I've got a few months. I should be done. Well done with painting the downstairs by that point. Unless I decide to paint the bathroom. But if I paint the bathroom, it's just going to be solid colors. And should be like a weekend sort of thing. It shouldn't be it shouldn't be an insanely long thing. But you know, I didn't plan on spending that much time painting above my fucking cabinets either. So I may start, of course, finally hit the upstairs here and finish the drywall. Painting this will be no problem though once the drywall's up, because I'm just painting the wall that what is currently already painted. I'll just need to make sure I do primer over it first, because it's just gonna be drywall, and then just go over it with the, hopefully it matches. I should probably get that paint out and just see that if that paint matches. Because if it doesn't match, then I'm just going to have to paint the whole room. I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but it would kind of suck to have to, because then I have to move my shit out of the way. My desks. I've got two desks up in here. It'd be kind of a pain in the ass. I mean, probably be for the best, though, to paint the whole damn thing. But again, I don't have to move shit and then put a bunch of plastic down and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, yeah, so hopefully I'll get to meet the Mr. Bruce Campbell, but it would be cool, though, to just, like, have that bust with me, in case he would like to see it, though I don't know, I would imagine you probably don't have much time, like, he's probably not spending a whole lot of time there, like, talking with people, but I don't know, I wonder what he's like to meet in person. Let's hear meeting Bruce Campbell. There's got to be some stories here. let's see here. Here we go. There's a goddamn right, Evil Dead. I am going to... Oh, I'm joining the Evil Dead community here. You're goddamn right. How am I not already a part of that subreddit? here we go. There's a subreddit of experiences meeting Bruce Campbell here under the Evil Dead. See here. Hi. So as you can see, this post is about meeting Bruce, the GOAT. You're goddamn right. Greatest of all time. I love reading about people's experiences meeting my faves, so feel free to share your story. Also, can I just say how lucky this girl is? Here's a picture of them just holding a girl back like on the cover of like a romantic, almost like a novella or like Gone with the Wind, where he's just like giving her the dip. Anyway, just giving her a real passionate look. Pretty great. if you're reading this, please tell me how you formulated your question for him to pose with you like this. See, Minecraft Troller 28 says, also, can I just say how lucky... That's not some random woman Bruce is posing with. That's Jane Levy, who played Mia in the 20... Oh, shit. Nice. Mia in the 2013 Evil Dead film. This is a photo from when they were doing all the press material for that movie. I did not realize. That's pretty cool. I need to read stories of people meeting him here. Oh, here we go. I met him years ago at a con. He was asking all the folks in the front of me what they did for a living. When it was my turn, he seemed kind of grumpy and said, so what do you do for a living? I told him I was a pediatric clinical pharmacist, and he looked up at me from signing a photo and with big surprised eyes said, really? Cool. I told him how much my father and I enjoyed the audiobook of Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. He said he appreciated that and he was proud of it, but also remarked how expensive it was to make. Somebody did reply to that. That book was dope. Yeah, somebody does say, yeah, Bruce ain't going to pose like that with anyone other than a co-star or co-worker, LOL. Another person says, I met him, XCiv4Ace says, I met him sometime around 2017 or 2018 when he was doing a book signing tour for Hail to the Chin. It was in a local mall comic shop after hours. He first showed up and told everyone to go to the food court, and he talked to us and answered questions for a good 45 minutes to an hour. Fuck yeah. He then went to the comic shop and started signing autographs. There were over 100,000 people there. My number was like 900-something, and there were plenty of people in line behind me. Wow. So when it was my turn, he had already been signing autographs for a couple of hours, but he was still in good spirits. I shook his hand and thanked him, and he thanked me for waiting so long. The whole encounter took about 20 seconds, but I'd gladly do it all over again. He's a class act. Classy Bruce, he's really one of the nicest and most grateful celebrities ever. Thanks for sharing. Let's see here. Mr. Mailbox says, when I was 18, my uncle went to a book signing / meet and greet. My uncle called me when he was close to the front of the line, and when he got to Bruce, my uncle told him I was a college freshman looking for advice, but Bruce took the phone and said, hey there, Mr. Mailbox. Is this his name outside of Reddit? Your uncle tells me you're looking for some advice. Let me just say, the secret to my success has absolutely been click and I fangirled for about 2 hours. So I guess he hung up. Anyway. It says, Shanna Hubert says, I heard he's done that stuff to a lot of people, talking to them and then hanging the phone up. That is pretty funny, man. That is pretty great. That is, I'm for that. let's see here. Out of Time Part 3 says, I met Bruce a few years ago at a con and saw him during a showing of Evil Dead in Jacksonville, Florida. It had been his first time visiting Jacksonville, and the show... Shawnee's low-key why I moved there. I think that's a typo. Show is low-key. It had been the first time. Jacksonville is in Ash vs. Evil Dead is refer because they're Jacksonville is in the show. I think that's what they're referring to. My favorite one, though, was meeting Sam Raimi last year, and I told him about a fan theory of mine that he seemed to actually enjoy. Of course you're going to meet him in Jacksonville. That's pretty sweet because that's a big part of the show. Papa here, Out of Time Part 3. This is the theory. It says Ash was not meant to be the promised one. Cheryl was. Cheryl got it so rough in the first movie because the Evil Dead were targeting the promised one. Once they have her, the destiny passes on to her idiot brother Ash. Joe Aziz says, that's a fun theory. I've sort of heard that one. I think it's a fun one. Just curious to do you have a reasoning as to why the book has pics of Ash then? Out of Time Part 3. A very good question. It's a hard concept to explain, but I'll try. The pages didn't come into existence until after Cheryl was dead. History rewrote the pages like the photograph in Back to the Future. The battle between good and evil is constant through time and all planes of existence. Our earthly realm is but another chessboard in the war, and the characters are pieces. The players are the forces of good and evil. Reality is in flux when these forces merge with our world to play their game. For example, the laughing deer head and time speeding up to trap Ash in darkness. In Evil Dead 2, there were manipulations by the dark forces in an attempt to win. The plan for the forces of good was to create Cheryl to be the promised one. Think about the obstacles in the cemetery in Army of Darkness. Cheryl would have aced the remembrance test in picking the right book. Klaatu Varata. A promised one must exist in order for the game to be played, though through tricky and manipulation, the forces of evil kill the promised one that was planned. The duty passes to Ash, who then travels back and fulfills the prophecy, albeit half-assedly. The reason Ash is in the book is because it was physically him who went back and not Cheryl. When Cheryl dies, the timeline alters, and while it may seem like a cop-out, I see it as a wrinkle in the re-smoothing of the timeline. Because notice how the pages were not seen by human eyes until after Cheryl was dead. I see the pages being in flux because they have one foot in the dark realm. just like the photograph in Back to the Future, ash may not have been on the pages at all until human eyes gazed upon it and turned it into concrete reality. Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting. Let's see here. He goes on to say, actually, I see I worded it weird. It wasn't Bruce I told it this to. It was Sam Raimi trying to remain level-headed, but I'd say he kind of loved the concept. One of the things about the theory for me is that it doesn't have to change any of the context of arc for the movie as it is, with the way the character of Ash evolved into a goofball, especially. Okay, here we go. Here's another meeting experience. Austin Comic-Con about 10 years ago. This is 2 years ago. What the fuck? Oh, Missouri Focus Group. This seems like bullshit. It pays $225. I kind of like... That sounds like a scam text. Anyway. Focus groups getting paid. Is that a thing? I don't know. Anyway. Austin Comic-Con about 10 years ago. It was 2 years ago this post, so it was... They deleted their account. Strangely, I was in the meet and greet line, and next up, when staff asked if they could cut a severely disabled fellow in front of me that had about 50 things he wanted signed, limit was 2, I think. Go for it, says I. I'm pretty sure it was fellow's moment of a lifetime. I've rarely seen someone so happy. Totally worth the wait. Bruce signed everything and talked to him a good 10 minutes. When my turn came, Bruce thanked me for standing aside for old boy. When I thanked him for making a flick from my neck of the woods, Bubba Hotep, Bruce immediately wanted to know if I knew the author Joe R. Lansdale. Yes, of course. Next town over, met him several times. Plenty of autographs. Bruce then told a story about the Marx Brothers and Nakodashes and thanked me again. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Nakodashes, thank me again. Great guy, and he looked fabulous in canary yellow smoking jacket / tux. I'll go with one more here by Solo Agent 007. I am very curious about what it's like to meet the man. It was Monsterpalooza 1 year ago, or 1 year, sorry, not ago. This is, he was set to be one of the, top guests. If anyone is familiar with Bruce at cons, he only takes professional photos, no photos with fans from a phone. Good to know. At the time, Monsterpalooza never implemented a designated spot for pro photos, but Bruce wasn't having it. And it was already too late for the event to set up the hassle of a room to take pics separate from the greeting table. So what happens? Bruce gets his own entire room for a meet and greet. Before you go in to meet him, there is a staff member to remind you this is only for a signing, no pics, except, etc. So I go at the end of this hall and into a room. The lights are slightly dimmed. Elevator music is playing on some overhead speakers. There's couches, coffee made, his own personal fridge, and the table he sat with waiting to meet whoever came in. He was really nice and personable, even drew a shotgun blast out of the pic he signed for me. Nice. All in all, it was a different kind of experience, and if anything taught me, Bruce really knows how to make a deal for himself. Hail to the king, baby. There's all kinds of people talking about just him staying for hours. So I feel like there's a strong chance I go in to meet him on Halloween of all nights. That, you know, there's a strong chance that, you know, he'll do a long meet and greet. I don't know that I would take that head with me, the bust for him to sign. I'd probably show him a picture of it though. But it would be awesome if I could get a like professional photo with him and the bust. That would be just epic. I would fucking love that. Holy shit. Chimp Malone. Mr. Bruce fucking Campbell. The chin of all chins. The goat of chins. Chin goat. Love me some Bruce Campbell, man. Fucking Ugh. I feel like this is, knowing that he's going to be in St. Louis and Halloween, I mean, that's my chance. I got to take this chance if I'm ever going to meet Bruce Campbell. So, I got to look up. I've seen, you know, obviously The Evil Dead is my favorite Bruce Campbell character, really. You know, Ash Williams. Whether it be, you know, Ash versus the Evil Dead, Evil Dead 1, 2, and Army of Darkness. I mean, absolutely legendary. But, I grew up with Bruce being in a lot of the shit I watched. I watched Xena, Warrior Princess, of course, as a young man. And he was, of course, in there as Fox is trying to attack me. Briscoe County Jr., was it? Was it a TV show he was in? The Western show. I didn't watch that one so much, but I was, you know, I watched Xena all the fucking time. I've tried to watch that one as an adult, and it's kind of hard too, as Fox is really trying to attack me here. There's, buddy, come on, man. Play with this mouse. Play with the mouse. Play with the mouse, sir. Go after that. He didn't go for that. He was slightly distracted, but he did not seem to want to give a shit about that mouse. Come on, buddy. Bruce Campbell was even an episode of the X-Files, man. It doesn't say what season that, in 99. I don't know what season. That was near the end. He played Wayne Winesider in The X-Files. I love The X-Files. I'm looking over his IMDb, which is just a massive, massive thing. Because, of course, he's had a lot of, like, small parts in a lot of shit. He was in an episode of the Weird Science TV show. I haven't watched that in, you know, since it came out in 97. I did watch the show. Of course, I love the movie. Son of a bitch. I'm trying to find The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. Yeah, that was 27 episodes. So was it like a season and a half-ish? That might just be one season. I mean, you know, TV shows used to... I felt like that show was on for a while, but I guess not as long as I would have thought. Oh, he's in Darkman. Which is a Sam Raimi film, of course. Sam Raimi, of course, is he got into the movie business with Sam Raimi. And Darkman is, of course, the first reel, I would say, which I haven't watched Darkman in years, but that is a great film. Darkman is, Liam Neeson, I would say, is like first real action film. I need to watch Darkman again. Holy shit. And it's great. They even gave him the Shemp. They gave him the name Shemp in there. Son of a bitch. But yeah, I was trying to think of like other things that really pop out in my brain as far as Mr. Bruce Campbell goes. But, mainly it's Ash. But, I mean, Burn Notice, the TV show, I've watched, not all of it, but I watched a lot of, you know, Burn Notice just because it's, you know, it's pretty great. I got to say, though, the Ash versus Evil Dead series, fucking amazing. Fucking amazing. I know I've talked about it in the past on this podcast, but it might have been a minute. Well, I guess not when I was talking about the bust. But just the way the show opens is just epic. And, him showing up at a bar at last call, effectively picking up a woman at last call. And, of course, with the line of, they... say, never jump in front of a speeding locomotive, but what they don't tell you is sometimes there's a little boy in front of that locomotive. Something along those lines. So great. Then he fucks her in the bathroom. She turns into a deadite. I mean, legend, dairy. You know, what can I say? So good, so good. I kind of lost track getting it stuck in the chin. I was stuck in the chin there for a while, focused on the chin. It was Stephen Colbert, his last episode of The Late Show was Stephen Colbert. And it saddened. I'm a longtime fan of Stephen Colbert. I loved the Colbert Report. I watched The Daily Show back when Craig Kilborn was on The Daily Show, and I want to say Colbert might have predated Jon Stewart on there as a correspondent. I wouldn't swear to it. He might have started when Jon Stewart did, but it's been a while. It's been a minute. I know, but he was a fantastic as a correspondent. And I mean, the early days of The Daily Show were just fucking fantastic, because like when they would do remotes and go out on location and interview people, people had no idea what the fuck The Daily Show was in the early days. And so, you know, they would think that they're a serious broadcasting. Now everyone knows what the fuck The Daily Show is. So even if they attempted to do this... also, it's so out there that people recognize the correspondents from The Daily Show, like in the early days, of Jon Stewart and the Craig Kilborn days, like, nobody had a fucking idea. It was just on Comedy Central, you know, and there wasn't YouTube around, to make the shit go viral. But seeing like Colbert was one of the best. The shit he would say to people, like when interviewing, was absolutely fantastic. Steve Carell, of course, started out on there too. And I mean, there was great just correspondence in those early days. And but Colbert, I loved his interviews, and I think he started on the Colbert Report when he would interview people. Like, that shit was fantastic. Of course, he was in character the whole time. And he was basically just loved George W. Bush in character. And you want a good treat, you know, watch him go to the correspondence dinner. I forgot what year it was. But, of course, it was when George W. Bush was in office, like 2004-ish, the White House correspondence dinner, I want to say-ish. And, of course... he was fantastic during that, but he stayed in character, the Colbert character, which threw me off when he did The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, because he was Stephen Colbert, like not Colbert, like the mega right-wing Colbert. But the Colbert Report was fantastic. His interviews that he would do with people always ended with George W. Bush, great president. Or greatest, and always the people he'd be interviewing are like, I'm gonna go with neither. He's like, I'll put you down for great. I just watched before doing this podcast, like right before. I was on YouTube, and I watched Stephen Colbert on Only in Monroe, the public access TV show in Monroe, Michigan. The day before or so, like he did The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. He did Only in Monroe, the public access, which had about like, yeah, like 12 viewers ish. 12, and Stephen Colbert had asked them like how many viewers they had, and they said 12. He's like, oh, like 12,000. Like, no, 12. And holy shit, I think I may have watched a clip. I think you can find that original one on YouTube, But he did it again. He bookended it, the late show with Stephen Colbert, by appearing again and only in Monroe a day after his final show for the late show. And it's fucking great. It is fucking great. I liked it better than I didn't see quite the whole show of the late show, which I did watch a good chunk of it. But this one gives me some like early Colbert vibes. At least with like maybe Colbert Report. He's not in character, but it's so great that, you know, there's no budget for this and stuff. And he's just like a local public access shit. And Jack White is with him doing deadpan, which he was doing really good in the deadpan, not laughing at stuff. until, spoiler alert, Colbert had Jack White help him with a taste test between local Michigan hot dogs places, Vincent's and Monroe's, I think, or Old Monroe's. I don't remember the other place. Anyway, they taste tested chili dogs, which I feel like they needed some John Cougar Mellencamp there with Jack and Diane. They're going to suck on chili dogs. But they lady and tramped the both chili dogs, and Jack did not want to, like, seriously didn't want to do it. He was like breaking a bit, and he's like, you're serious? Like, leading to the tramp this stuff. And when they did the second dog, Steve was trying to make eye contact with Jack, and it fucked him all up. They're laying the tramp and a fucking two different chili dogs. it's beautiful. It was fantastic. shit was epic. I, man, if he did that, like, I couldn't stop watching it. I pulled it up on YouTube. and like, man, if he keeps doing that, like, holy shit, I don't know what Steven's going to do next. I did hear that he was going to, with Peter Jackson, write, the next, like, Lord of the Rings, movie script, which he is, if you're unaware, a huge fan of Lord of the Rings and knows like everything about Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings. He can tell you about everything as far as that is concerned. Huge fan of it. He was had like a cameo in at least one of the Hobbit movies. Of course, they made that into a trilogy. It's been forever since I watched. I haven't seen The Hobbit since it came out. I'd have to go back and watch that one. I've seen the trilogy of The Lord of the Rings many times, but The Hobbit I only went and saw in the theater when it came out. So I remember going to Denny's and getting the Hobbit Shire sausage, the Shire sausage, the mashed sausage. I was like, I want to put that Shire sausage in my mouth, put it down my throat. Shire sausage. It was good. It was good. Man, the closest Denny's to me has been shut down, sadly. I used to, you know, occasionally go to the Denny's in Eureka. I haven't been to a Denny's in years now. It's a damn shame. I'm pretty sure they don't have a Shire sausage anymore, though, so I'm going to be shit out of luck. Unless, you know, when this next Lord of the Rings movie comes out, you know, then we can get some more Shire sausage going on. If that happens, I'm going to have to make a special trip to a Denny's so I can once again put a Shire sausage down my throat. I even have Colbert put out a book during the Colbert Report. And I believe it's called, I'm not sure where I have it at the moment. I have it still around somewhere. It's I Am America and So Can You, if I remember correctly the name of the title. And he's doing the pull squint where he's like pulling the glasses down and squinting. Or he's doing something like that on the cover. It's been a while since I looked at it, many years. But goddamn, yeah, I love some old Colbert, man. He was so ballsy when he used to go into character. And I mean, he testified in front of Congress. Hold on. I got to pull. Congressional hearing. I forgot what it was all. There was, yeah, he testified in front of the House Judiciary Committee's Immigration Subcommittee in September of 2010, discussed the role of immigrant labor in the U.S., and he stayed in character the whole time. that was another good one. Like, man, he's just so ballsy just to go into character and make, And the correspondence dinner, holy fuck. Let's see here. That one, I want to say it was 2004. Shit. There we go. Oh, 2006. I had the year wrong. It was early 2000s. I knew that. As let's see what Wikipedia has to say for it. On April 29, 2006, American comedian Stephen Colbert appeared at the featured entertainer at the 2006 White House Correspondents Association Dinner, which was held in D.C. at the Hilton Washington Hotel. Colbert's performance, consisting of a 16-minute podium speech and a 7-minute video presentation, was broadcast live across the U.S. on the cable television network C-SPAN and MSNBC. A few times I'd be like, yes, I'm watching C-SPAN. Standing a few feet from President George W. Bush in front of an audience of celebrities, politicians, and members of the White House press corps, Colbert delivered a controversial, satirical routine targeting the president and the media. He spoke in the persona of the character he played on Comedy Central's The Colbert Report, a parody of conservative pundits such as Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. Colbert's performance quickly became an internet and media sensation. Commentators remarked on the humor of Colbert's performance and the political nature of his remarks, and speculated as to whether there was a cover-up by the media in the way the event was reported. Let's see here. It was classic. There's a lot on this Wikipedia page. I guess it just goes into everything that he is saying, but holy shit. Pull that one up if you want some good. I wish I would have had it just pre-upped or whatever for this. But man, I'm going to have to remember to watch that later. As that shit was classic. I mean, the shit he was saying, if I remember correctly, the shit he was saying to George W. Bush, like in person, you know? Of course, there's a bunch of people there. It's not like, but critiquing the president, who was, you know, he was not a fan of George W. Bush, and, you know, he's just lambasting him. Although in the idea of just like saying, you know, basically that he's pretending to be in favor of the shit, but just crucify him. Holy shit. yeah. Well, let's just get to the response. I'll read the response because it's fairly shortish. Wikipedia. Colbert's performance received a variety of reactions from the media in Washington. The response from both politicians and the press corps was negative. Both groups, having been targets of Colbert's satire, the Washington press corps felt that Colbert had bombed. In the room, sure, but he won over the country, I'm going to say. The Washington Post columnist Richard Cohen found that Colbert's jokes were lame and insulting. He wrote that Colbert was rude and a bully. Politician Steny Hoyer felt that Colbert had gone too far, telling the newspaper The Hill that Bush is the president of the United States and he deserves some respect. Conservative pundit Mary Madeline called Colbert's performance a predictable Bush-bashing kind of humor. Columnist Anna Marie Cox chastised those who praised Colbert as a hero. I somehow doubt that Bush has never heard these criticisms before, she added. Comedy can have a political point, but it is not political action. On The Daily Show, Jon Stewart remarked, tongue-in-cheek, apparently Colbert was under the impression that they'd hired him to do what he does every night on television. Why would they hire him? That's the funniest part. Like, what were they thinking? While comics were expected to tell jokes about the administration, the 2006 dinner was held at a time when the relationship between the administration and the media was under great strain. Oh, that sounds almost familiar. I'm feeling some deja vu. and the administration was sensitive to criticism. Attorney and columnist Julie Hilden concluded that Colbert's vituperative parody, not familiar with that word, unfortunately, might have been unfair and under different circumstances, but noted that Bush's record of controlling bad press created a heightened justification for people to criticize him when they got the chance. Media Matters, an editor and publisher, came to Colbert's defense, calling his detractors hypocrites. They contrasted the critical reaction to Colbert to the praise that many in the press had for a controversial routine that Bush performed at a similar... Can't speak. My mouth is dry. I need some water. In a similar media dinner in 2004, where Bush was shown looking for WMDs in the Oval Office and joking, "Those weapons of mass destruction must be somewhere." Yeah, you fucking piece of shit. And nope, no weapons over there. What a fucking, like, they made up, just to clarify with that joke, the Bush administration fabricated evidence to show that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction so he could go in there and start a fucking war. And again, George W. Bush just joking about it. Oh, and the press is going to be like, well, how can Stephen Colbert be so mean? Anyway, Canadian Broadcast Corporation news online columnist Heather Malik wrote, "Colbert had the wit and raw courage to do to Bush what Mark Antony did to Brutus, murderer of Caesar. As the American media has self-destructed, it takes Colbert to damn Bush with devastatingly ironic praise." Comedian and eventual Democratic U.S. Senator Al Franken, who performed at similar dinners twice during the Clinton administration, admired what Colbert had done. Its year-end issue, New York Magazine, described Colbert's performance as one of the most brilliant moments of 2006. Times' James Poniewozik noted that in the days after Stephen Colbert performed at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, this has become the political culture touchstone issue 2006, like whether you drive a hybrid or use the term freedom fries. Anyway, yeah. You know, nowadays the excitement I guess we get for a correspondence dinner is a assassination attempt. It's a little bit different. Which it's a lot of people seem to believe that it was a fake assassination attempt on that one. As Trump famously never went to a correspondence dinner before then all of a sudden, which I don't know that it was like big public knowledge to begin with that he was going to be at the correspondence dinner. And then all of a sudden somebody tries to assassinate him. I mean, I don't know that it matters whether it's real or fake at this point. But honestly, I don't have any thoughts one way or the other on that. I could very well see Trump just pulling out. You know, I got bad numbers, people. We need another assassination attempt. We need to get those poll numbers up. When I took the shrapnel to the ear, I won the presidency thanks to assassin's bullet. I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking forward to, you know, Stephen Colbert still doing some stuff. I'm hoping, you know, what is he going to do? He hasn't, he was a little busy still having a big late night show and doing that. But, you know, I don't see him going away. He seems to, I think it, just out of spite, he's not going to want to go away. Because, you know, obviously CBS has said it's for financial reasons. The show costs too much money. You know, they do have sponsors. Sponsors pay for the fucking show. But they claim that it's too expensive, that they are not making enough money. Which, man, I got to say, I didn't watch The Late Show as much as I did The Colbert Report. Colbert Report, I watched, like, every fucking night when that shit was on. Nowadays, like, I'll catch some clips on YouTube of The Late Show. But, not anymore, I guess. anyway, I really love what they did with the Ed Sullivan Theater there. Of course, that is where Ed Sullivan had a show. The Beatles were on stage when they first appeared in America. They went to the Ed Sullivan Show, played on that stage. And, of course, David Letterman's show was in the Ed Sullivan Theater there. And Letterman, by the time Letterman did, the studio didn't look like it did when Ed Sullivan was there. And they covered up a lot of the architecture that was there. And when Colbert took over the Late Show, they were excited to find out a lot of the architecture that was there during the Ed Sullivan days was like basically covered over, and they redid the theater, and it looks amazing. I'm sad I never went to New York to. I've only been to the airport in New York. I need to just go on a New York trip sometime. But he, you know, they redid the theater and tore down like the old walls that were covering the architecture of the Ed Sullivan Theater that was remarkably still there, and they restored it, and it looks amazing. I don't know what's going to happen to Ed Sullivan Theater now. Hopefully they, you know, keep it intact. Obviously CBS is like, no, we're not doing any late night. Maybe it's Greg Gutfeld. Maybe Gutfeld now is going to be on CBS. I was going to say, I'd still like to go, you know, to the Ed Sullivan Theater, but now I'm thinking, since Barry Weiss is running things over at CBS, it's probably going to be, if they do anything in that theater, it's going to be something I'm probably not going to want to go see. Though maybe you can do tours of just the, you know, the Ed Sullivan Theater. That might be a thing, which, you know, I wouldn't want to go to a taping of some right-wing show that's just throating the president, you know. It's going balls deep on those orange balls, you know. I feel like he puts bronzer on his dick, too. But I don't know. I don't want to find out, really. anyway. Yeah, it's what's going to happen is this massive slush fund that he created to pay off basically his thugs, the Jan Sixers. And basically he's going to use those funds for himself. He's just a big taxpayer slush fund. And of course, he's created. It's going to be whoever gets that theater, I guess, is going to be a recipient, one of the recipients of the slush fund monies, which they put up the number $1.776 billion taxpayer tax, our tax money. If you're American, you know, tax, taking our money, which they can't pay for healthcare in this country. That's a no-go, but we can give reparations to Jan Six writers, right? But the 1776 is what they were going with, but in the actual filing of the stuff, it's unlimited funds basically. That is just so just do what Hitler did, which is would give a slush fund so he could pay the brown shirts and his, you know, personal, the SS and whatnot. So, you know, hey, there's that to look forward to. I feel like I really missed out by not shitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk. I could have been up for some funds. Maybe I would have spent a little time in jail. Would have gotten pardoned. And a possible payout. It's too bad I have a conscience. That I mean, honestly, I'm not a fan of Nancy Pelosi shitting on her desk. I don't like to shit in public. That's kind of a problem. If I was gonna fuck with somebody, you know, Nancy Pelosi would, you know, it wouldn't break my heart. Though again, I have a conscience, and just breaking into the Capitol, I probably would have a problem with that. Not to mention to do it for Trump to help him overthrow an election. That's kind of a problem. But had I known I was going to get the chance to have unlimited funds to do so, maybe I could then, you know, have gotten a show in the Ed Sullivan Theater. Had I had the foresight to see what was coming at the end of the rainbow, that my pot of gold would have been at the end of that rainbow, then perhaps I would have partaken. Or not, you know. I wouldn't have the Slapbox penthouse. and have the Overlook Hotel hexagon pattern painted on my wall. Although, you know, with that slush fund, had I gotten a big piece of that, I'd have unlimited funds to possibly pay someone to put that painting somewhere on my wall. Son of a bitch. It doesn't pay to have a conscience, unfortunately, especially in America. It is you're gonna pay for that if you abide by laws and care about people. You're gonna pay, unfortunately. Wish that wasn't the case, but I'm trying to end on a bright note here, and it's hard to. Hey, Bruce Campbell's gonna be in St. Louis on Halloween, and man, I don't know when tickets are gonna go to sale on sale. It looks like they only have about like 3 months in advance as far as tickets on the Alamo Drafthouse website, but I'm just gonna have to keep refreshing that from now until October, or until when they put that shit up for sale. But I will definitely pay. And if it looks like Bruce Campbell will only take a picture with you if it's got a professional photographer. So I'd imagine there's going to cost to get some photos. And you know what? Fuck it. I guess I'm gonna have to pay for a photo with him if that's the case. I just want to meet him. You know, it just to shake the man's hand. I love Mr. Bruce Campbell. And just seems like a cool dude. And my order has gone through Amazon, so I will be seeing this Bruce Campbell's first book. If Chins Could Kill, I will be receiving that. Let's see here, ish, arriving June 1st to June 3rd. I'll be receiving that. So I look forward to getting to know Bruce a little bit more, although I don't know when I'm going to read it yet, as it might be a while, as I need to, finish painting. I might have to wait till the painting's done before I read that book. So that's really all I've got. As always, that is a kid in a wheelchair, not a trash can.